Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Are you one of many Americans who are tired of people being bullied and discriminated? You are not alone. Bullying has a rippling effect on the person who is being harassed and everyone associated with the bullied person. The targeted adult or child may have been physically or psychologically bullied. They often bring home their anguish with them, and this can have a crippling effect on everyone associated with the one who's being bullied or discriminated. It's time to shed some light on how to reduce bullying in the school systems, how to create safe and healthy work environments for employees. I blow the whistle on how to protect yourself if you're being bullied and educate listeners on their rights if they're being bullied or discriminated. I bring in the best experts who provide empowering strategies, tips on resiliency, how to handle the experience of being bullied or discriminated, how to heal and overcome the effects of being mistreated. If you are ready to gain knowledge and insights on bullying and discrimination, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Hi, and welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Today, I am just honored because I have Wendy McClellan, who lives in Canada. Not in the United States, but in Canada. She's going to be on the show. And I'm going to tell you about her. I remember meeting her in Washington State, and I was writing my first book, which was called The Empowered Whistleblower, and I was clueless. I had no idea how to write a book, how to market it, you know, how to get attention and such. And Wendy's been such a creative person and a good sense of business. So let me tell you about her. She's been a past nominee for Canadian Entrepreneur of the Year. That's pretty impressive. She's had numerous diverse businesses over the past 30 years. The past decade, she's focused on helping people better understand social media and marketing. And I know I've been part of that too, learning from you. So last year, Wendy chose to reinvent herself again with a major shift in her work. She now works to shed light on the abuse of women suffering at the hands of religion. That's a big one. She's collecting interviews from women all around the world from all different faiths. Wendy is also now an advocate for medical cannabis, which has helped her greatly improve multiple health issues she has lived with. Now, Wendy's living a gypsy life caring for people's pets as a pet sitter. And I told her earlier, I wish she was here. She could watch my pets. So this allows her to travel and spend lots of time with four-legged friends. And Wendy has proven that reinvention is possible at any age. Welcome, Wendy. How are you today?
Hi, Dawn. It's so good to talk to you again. I'm glad. Just really nice to reconnect with an old friend.
It really is. Now, you have a story that would just blow most people's minds. We nearly lost you, and this is before I actually met you. You nearly died. Would you mind talking about your past? I mean, how you survived and why you want medical cannabis to be, you know, out there for people and such?
Yeah, nearly 20 years ago, I contracted E. coli, which is a very common bacteria that lives on almost any surface in your home, in a shopping mall, anywhere you go. And because my immune system was a little low, I was a single mom, a divorced mom with three young kids and running a business. I wasn't taking care of myself, and the E. coli got a hold in my body, and it ended up destroying one of my kidneys, scarring my corneas, giving me brain damage. But the worst of it was it went into my spine. And so L3, L4, and L5 in my lower spine, and the vertebrae and the discs were disintegrated in part by the E. coli. So portions of them were eaten away. And so I spent about 2 months in a trauma center in a hospital here in Vancouver, British Columbia. And then another 4 months in a plaster cast from just under my arms to my knees to fuse the bone fragments back around the spinal cord. And it took about a year and a half to learn how to walk again without a cane. And then to get my mental function back and my emotional stability back. So it was a long journey to try and come back.
Yeah. So I can understand why you're an advocate for medical cannabis. Do you want to talk about that for a minute before we talk about other things?
Absolutely. When I left the hospital, I was on 17 different medications. Five of them were opiate related or opiates. So I've been on everything from morphine, Dilaudid, OxyContin, all of them. And as anybody who's had to take those drugs long-term knows, one, the effectiveness wears off over time. And two, addiction can be a problem. Mm-hmm. And three, it is very damaging for your internal body and your internal systems. And over the past few years, I also developed rheumatoid arthritis and fibromyalgia. So there were days when my entire body just felt like it was on fire. And last year, early last year, and late 2016, there were numerous times where I felt pretty close to suicidal. I was just in so much pain and I saw no hope. Mm-hmm. I was taking 4, 5, 6 morphine at a time. I'm washing down with straight vodka just to get, 2 hours of fitful sleep. And last summer, in 2017, I just thought, I have got to find a solution, or I'm just, there's no way I can hang on like this. So I started investigating cannabis and began taking cannabis oils. So I'm not smoking it, but I'm taking it. And there's two basic kinds of medical cannabis. One is CBD, mm-hmm. and that comes from the hemp plant. It is non-addictive. It is non-high inducing. So it is just, it's a really, I would say, a body and brain nourishing drug. And what it immediately did for me was it helped improve my sleep. Mm-hmm. It helped with overall pain relief in terms of the fibromyalgia and the rheumatoid arthritis. And then in addition to the CBD, I began taking THC. Now that is the portion that can make you high. I take a very small dose of that 3 times a day and a larger dose of the CBD 3 times a day. And since last August, what has happened for me is almost, as I said to you before we start recording, almost a miracle. My fibromyalgia and rheumatoid arthritis symptoms have decreased by 80 to 85%.
Wow.
I can go up and down stairs with no pain. Mm-hmm. If I do have pain, I'll take a little bit more of the cannabis oil, or I'll use a cannabis cream right on the joints. But the biggest thing for me is I've been on antidepressants nearly 30 years, and I've been able to cut back my antidepressants by 2/3.
That's unreal.
And I'm feeling mentally sharper and much more alert and happy than I can remember being in a very, very long time. So I'm absolutely an advocate for it. And I'm learning everything I can now so that I can start educating other people properly and help refer them to clinics where they can access medical cannabis, because I just think this is such an amazing drug, a medicine for so many people.
Yes, yes, definitely. Well, thank you for sharing that. So you've been busy and you're one of the most diverse people I know. What are you doing around? You are, even in the United States, if I was to compare you to anybody, we should never compare each other, but you're a very busy person with major big projects all the time. What's going on right now? Because in your bio, you're talking about shedding light on the abuse women suffer at the hands of religion. And this podcast today is about bullying and discrimination in religion. So I'm going to let you take it from here and whatever you want to share with us.
So I've always been interested in religion and why people believe what they believe. So from the time I was a teenager, I've studied religion. And I have a very good grasp on all the major religions, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and some of the others, Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, Scientology. So I've been able to, sorry about that, it's my phone, to really get an understanding of different faiths and sort of where they came from. And one of the places where I talk to a lot of people about religion and politics and world events is Twitter. And I began noticing on Twitter more and more people who were calling themselves ex-Muslim, ex-Jew, ex-Jehovah's Witness. And I started to think, okay, why are they leaving? My own spiritual journey is one of leaving the faith as well, but I was curious about other people. So I started reaching out to people, and the more I reached out to women, the more I started to hear these stories. And so I've started to collect stories from women all over the world. I'm going to put them into a book called When Faith Hurts. And it's basically women's personal stories of how their faith has harmed them. Now, I know that religion plays a big role in a lot of people's lives, and for many people, it is a central core of their life, and that's absolutely great. And I'm the first one to stand up for anyone to practice any religion they want, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. But what I was hearing in these stories was not supportive religion. It was bullying. It was physical and emotional harm. So I thought these stories need to come out. So I have an example. I have stories from women in Saudi Arabia who are ex-Muslims, who live as Muslims, because if they did declare that they were ex-Muslims, they could be killed for blasphemy.
Yeah.
So one of the women that I'm corresponding with, she's 28 years old, And her father had been her guardian. In Saudi Arabia, all women must have a male guardian, and they can't do anything without him. They can't leave the house, they cannot work, they cannot go to school, they cannot travel without their guardian's permission. And her father died, so her 17-year-old brother became her guardian. And he has now forbid her from going back to her job, from going out with friends. She's not allowed to leave the house. And she believes, because of the way that her brother is, she may never leave her home again. And
that is very sad.
It is. It's something that you just, I mean, us in the West, us women here, we just can't fathom that. But yet, because of the strict type of Islam that's practiced in Saudi Arabia, this is all perfectly legit. This is Sharia law.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of young teen girls as well in Saudi Arabia that I communicate with too. One of them, unfortunately, I've lost touch with, and that makes me very nervous, because if they're found out talking to someone about what's going on, they can be in really deep trouble. So this one young girl I haven't heard from for a little while, and I am quite concerned that it's really difficult for me to find out anything about her, what's going on with her. But the other side of this too is I have a woman that came out of a Christian cult in the United States. She suffered in her entire life in this cult of sexual abuse and physical abuse, and she ended up marrying someone in the cult and having children, and she left and went into hiding. I have a woman who came from a very strict Jewish Orthodox community in Brooklyn, and in many ways, the strict Jewish laws that apply to women in the Orthodox community, I'll be very clear on that, are very similar to Sharia law. They have private courts, separate courts, that review disputes among family members, husbands and wives. So instead of you going to a lawyer and saying, my husband's beating me, I want, or go to the police, I want to have a restraining order, I want a divorce, you go to these courts in the Jewish synagogues or in the Muslim mosques. And unfortunately, these courts usually side with the men, and in this woman's case they did. So she was divorced in the Jewish faith, not legally, but in the Jewish faith, and her children were taken from her, which is extremely common. The children are rarely left with the mother when this happens, and the women have no options. And one of the sad things is that because religion holds such power everywhere in the world, many law enforcement agencies hesitate to go up against them. And that to me is just wrong. In New York City, there's a small group of Orthodox rabbis who perform the bris, which is the ritual circumcision on newborn baby boys. And part of the traditional ritual way of doing it is after they cut the baby, which I can't imagine taking a beautiful newborn infant and then slicing part of their body off. But beyond that, the traditional part of it is that the rabbi sucks on the baby's penis to get the blood off. Well, there's a herpes epidemic in the Jewish community right now because these rabbis are passing herpes onto these newborn babies.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't
know that. I know. And the law enforcement won't do anything about it because they're afraid to go up against Jewish community. And it's the same with the Catholic Church. When there was allegations of abuse in the Catholic Church for years and years, law enforcement refused to go up against the powerful Catholic Church. And so I want to talk about these stories so that more people become aware of them and understand what is really going on in these places of worship and where men have the control and they decide what happens with women and children. So I've been collecting all these stories, and women have been really brave. I've allowed them to share their stories anonymously if they want. Many have given me their names so that if I have further questions, I can contact them. And they've really come forth and shared what's gone on for them. I have ex-Mormons, ex-Jehovah Witnesses. So it's just really inspiring to see the bravery of these women. And many of them have left their church communities. They've been shunned because once they leave the faith, they are shunned. They can have no more contact. And they've had to learn how to rebuild a whole new life. So I'm really, really proud and really inspired by these women. So yeah, that's why I want to share their stories.
Well, that's a big transformation to leave your church or whatever cult or such. Now, you talked about at one time you were going to write a book. Are you going to take these stories and compose a book out of it?
I am. Yes, absolutely. I was hoping to do it last year, but with my health problems, it just was, I had to focus on my own well-being first. But I am still collecting stories. So I would suspect in the next 8 to 10 months, I will have the book put together and get it out there.
Great. And will you self-publish or will you go after a publisher?
You know, I've written 3 books that I've self-published in the past. I might look at getting a publisher for this one, but I know the reality of getting a publisher, especially for an author that has self-published in the past. They don't put a whole ton of money into promoting your book. A lot of the work that I talked to you about doing, I'd still have to do if I was working with a publisher, because for a first-time author, they're not going to pour a whole bunch of money into marketing. So I'd still be doing that much work and maybe not generating the revenues, but I might get a bigger platform. So yeah. When the time comes to publish, I'll have to kind of, you know, check around and see if I could find a publisher and see if that would be a good opportunity.
Yeah, that makes sense. We're always having to market ourselves constantly, and you've always been very, very good at that. So tell me a typical day for you when you're dealing with this abuse of the women's, you know, at the hands of religion. What's your typical day? Excuse me.
Typical day, I can kind of give you the last 2 weeks. I've been in beautiful Banff, Alberta, high in the mountains, beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been cold, up down to minus 30, but it's bright and crisp and just stunningly gorgeous here. I've been looking after a beautiful little dog. So her and I go out for a walk in the morning, come back, have some breakfast. And then I'm usually online for a good portion of the day, usually on Twitter, because that's where I make most of my connections. And having conversations with people, chasing down leads for somebody who might have a story for me, or going and listening to a podcast of an interview with someone who I'm interested in hearing about, and just really making those connections that are going to give me access to stories and allow me, when the time comes, to promote the book. I'm always in the back of my head thinking, okay, how am I going to build my audience, and what can I do today to help grow that audience, so when the time comes to promote something, the audience is already built in. And then, you know, of course, we like to go for another walk during the day with the dog, in the afternoon with the dog. And I do a bit of writing. I try to write every day, and when I was writing my last book about my journey to learning how to walk again, I was really good. I wrote that book in 3 weeks. I disciplined myself to write 2 hours a day and got the book written in literally 3 weeks. I'm not that disciplined with my writing right now. You would say I'm writing maybe 2 days a week. So I probably need to get back into a bit more of a routine of writing on a regular basis. And then the medical cannabis, because I'm taking courses online and stuff, usually a couple days during the week I'm watching a webinar or doing some research on cannabis, because I want to start teaching other people about it, but also transition that into helping pets with using medical cannabis as well.
That's
always learning. I sometimes wish that I could actually plug my brain into a computer and just download everything I want to know.
You and me both. We're always curious and wanting to learn. So I know you're,
yes.
I know, Wendy, that you're gathering these stories, but if somebody got a hold of you, especially in the United States, you know, and they said yeah. they're being abused, maybe sexually abused, harassed, you know, raped. I mean,
yeah.
I know, well, let me back it up and say, when I went to Atlanta a couple years ago as part of a book called The Strength of My Soul, one of the female authors, co-authors, talked about being raped by her pastor. He's now in prison now. But what if somebody reached out to you and said that they're being harmed? I know you're a mentor. What would you say or do for that person?
I think I'd probably ask them a few questions. Number one, are you in immediate danger?
Mm-hmm.
Two, do you have any support system outside of this place of danger that you could go to? And three, have you reported it to the police? And depending on those answers, I would try to support the woman in finding resources that would get her out of that situation as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, that might mean simply doing a bit of research for her on her local police department, a women's shelter, because I know that in those times of crisis, when you're in a situation where you feel helpless and bullied, your brain doesn't always work clearly, and so you may not even have the wherewithal to go and find what you need for help. So if I could say find a women's shelter, I could connect this woman with that shelter or women's resource organization, and try to make that connection so I can help her somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you mostly are working with women, correct?
Yeah, I think because I too was a victim of rape as a teenager, and sexual abuse in the workplace a number of times, you know, that's just where my heart is. And I know men are abused too, and I think it's really important that we also have that conversation. Mm-hmm. That we acknowledge that very many men have been abused in the name of religion, and men need support just as much as women do. But for me, I know where I'm good, what I'm good at. So that's sort of what I'm sticking to.
So if a man contacted you and they had the same issues as a woman, you would probably help them.
Oh, absolutely.
I know
absolutely.
You would. Yes. And see, and I'm in Asheville, North Carolina, which is Eastern time zone in the United States. We have a nonprofit called Our Voice, and they have statistics saying 1 out of 4 women are sexually molested, raped, whatever, 1 out of 6, you know, men. I actually think it's mm-hmm. higher than that. So tell mm-hmm. me some success stories of helping somebody where they were in a bad situation and you jumped in and you helped them. Because you mentioned about people leaving their religion, which I think is a good thing. But tell me like an individual story or good success story.
I would say it's not an individual story of what I did. It's a story about what a group of us did. And it was actually for a man in Nigeria. Now, Nigeria is almost divided in half. Half of the country is conservative Muslim, and half the country is conservative Christian. And a lot of that Christianity comes from the United States. There's a lot of high profile, very evangelical preachers who go to African nations to spread this very rigid form of Christianity. And in Uganda and Nigeria, the American pastors are the ones that help put the laws on the books that homosexuality is a crime and the people should either be jailed or killed for it. Mm-hmm. So that was American Christianity that did that in Africa. And there was one man who I met via Twitter, and we started having private conversations. And he was in a difficult situation because he was an atheist and he was gay. And so he was in hiding, literally. And he was trying to stay out of everybody's way, but he knew that people knew who he was and what he was. And so he was reaching out to people in the West, asking if anybody could help him. And so he was actually he's a really good artist. And so it wasn't me, but some people helped him set up a page where he could sell his artwork. And people were donating money, and I was helping promote what he was doing so he could get enough funds to get out of the country and find sanctuary somewhere safe. And I am very happy to say that he is very safe right now. He's in another country, and he is, like I say, he is out of danger. And so that's why I think that's a good use of the power of social media too. Because can you imagine 20 years ago, you'd never read that story in the newspaper. We never would have been able to do anything.
No.
So I think, you know, having this tool, this social media tool, can really help change people's lives if it's used the proper way.
I like how you said the proper way, because sometimes people get on social media and they just go a little bit crazy. And yeah, but that's how I met you on social media too. Yeah. You know, I was
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember, several months ago, reading in a paper, and I don't know what state, I don't remember, or what the church was, and it really doesn't matter, but there was a young man who was gay, and they decided, without his knowledge, to beat the gayness out of him, and it just broke my heart, because I don't believe that people are born saying, you know, I want to be this or that. I think they're born either gay, we're born straight, or however you want to say it. But they beat him up so badly that law enforcement had to get involved. Have you dealt with things like that, Wendy?
No, I have not. But I do keep up with stories like that. And I do. One of the real areas of concern is in a number of U.S. states, there are laws on the books that allow religious exceptions for medical treatment. And that is where parents would say, no, we're praying over our child. We don't want them in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So in Idaho, I believe it is, they've had dozens of children die because parents refused medical treatment, and they're legally allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So we are killing our children in the name of a religion. And if people believe that God is loving, and most faiths believe that, why are we allowing children to die in the name of a loving God?
Mm-hmm.
So something is really out of whack there. Something is wrong. When you can use your religion to harm people and let people die, and attacking people because they're gay. I mean, you still have a number of states in the U.S. where it's legal to have gay conversion therapy. And this, what that is where they have it's mostly young men who are gay. They're placed in a room. They're watching gay pornography. And any time that the person may get aroused, they have electrodes on their testicles, and they're given an electric shock. That's gay deconversion therapy.
Gosh, that's harmful. That only messes them up more mentally.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hmm. Well, as you gather all these stories and get the book, I know you're always thinking ahead. What are some of the goals that you have ahead of you after you get this book written and out?
I think I'm mentally preparing myself to be a target, if you want, because the religious community of all faiths is very strong, mm-hmm. and very powerful and very vocal. And so I know that I'm going to be attacked for the book. And so I'm just kind of mentally preparing for that. But that's okay. I hope that the stories that I share will get people. And I don't want to deconvert anybody. I don't want anybody to leave their faith because they read my book. That's not the point. I want people to examine what happens in their church or their synagogue or their mosque or their temple and say, is this right? Is this moral? Is this what we should be doing in the name of a loving God? That's all. That's my goal, I think, is just mm-hmm. to have people open their eyes to what's really going on and ask, is this the right thing to do? And if it's not, then help change it.
Yes. Well, I'm going to set the intention that the book is highly successful and that you're not targeted, that you're contacted because you are putting the big elephant in the room. You know, you're saying, here it is, here it is. We've been ignoring it. Do you think your book can change the belief systems or how religious leaders act? Maybe some of them are just missing the point, or they're egotistical or narcissistic. Do you think your book's going to help them?
I don't know if it's going to help them directly, but I think what might happen is if enough people start to question what's going on in their churches and the places of worship, mm-hmm. that will be the change. That will force a change. What's really interesting, Dawn, is there's an organization, I believe it's theclergyproject.org, I think is the website. And this is an organization that helps clergy members from around the world and various faiths who are now atheists, who no longer believe, but they're still preaching. And I think there's a lot of those people in the churches. This organization helps them find a way to transition to a new career, to find a new support system. And it's amazing that there are actually people in pulpits on Sunday mornings who are preaching out of the Bible who do not believe it anymore. But if you've been a pastor for 25 or 30 years and that's all you know, it's a real, you know, what can you imagine what a massive step it would be to say, I no longer believe. Where would you go? What would you do? Your family might desert you. Your community certainly probably would. So I think there's a lot of change happening within all religions right now. And around the world, we're seeing two very strange dichotomies. We're seeing this massive upsurge in really evangelical, traditional fundamentalist religion, whether it's Islam, Judaism, or Christianity, and some of the others, those main three. And we're also seeing a more secularization of the world as well. People calling for that separation of church and state, fewer people going to church on Sundays, people finding their spirituality in different ways. So there's going to be this clash of cultures, I think, and it's going to be very interesting over the next 10 or 15, 20 years to see what happens. And what happens within these religious organizations. I mean, the light's been shone on the Catholic Church for years now, but we know the abuse is still happening. These priests are still being hidden. Many of them, you know, the Pope says, come and live in Vatican City and you're safe. Mm-hmm. And I guess the word that comes to my mind, it disgusts me that any person who harms anybody else in a religious setting is protected by that faith. There was a huge inquiry in Australia about Jehovah's Witnesses, because they have a massive problem of sexual abuse in their organization, massive. And they're told not to go to the police if someone is sexually abused. And so there's hundreds of thousands of cases of people sexually abused, children included, in the Jehovah's Witness faith. And it's all been hushed up. Well, now people are coming out and talking about it. So people are getting the message that, yeah, we can talk about this, and it's time.
Yeah, and sexual abuse needs to be addressed. I know I was sexually abused as a child, and I know how it impacts somebody's life. They can feel insecure, not have confidence, not have any courage, you know, or they can become an overachiever trying to prove themselves all the time. It can be so very harmful. But I do want to say, you know, when they started the Me Too, hashtag Me Too, and I have all the admiration for the people who come forward and say, yes, I've been harmed. I think it's very important not just to say, yes, I've been harmed, but to not only survive it, to be a thriver. So I believe people need to be able to step out and do advocacy if that's their calling, or help somebody or support somebody's doing advocacy like you're doing, Wendy.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think if you can lend your voice to a movement, I think that's important. And then if you can take it, if you're strong enough, and some people just aren't, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're strong enough to be more of an advocate, even if that just means sharing information about a march or a fundraiser or a speaker coming to town to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Those are all good things that you can do to help stop the cycle of abuse, shine a light on it, and hopefully change things for the generation that's coming up.
Now, what do you have to say if somebody is afraid to speak up because they're going to be retaliated against? What would you tell that person if they reached out to you?
I would probably start with, you know, finding them a safe sanctuary to get to first. Mm-hmm. That would be my first thing. And I also know that for some people, they are never going to be able to leave their abusive situation. They've just been so abused, so beaten down, so demoralized, and now they're so fearful that they don't know what's on the outside of those walls, that they'll never be able to get help. And that breaks my heart, that they don't know that there are people outside that would love to help them. So I would say, if someone is in that situation, you know, we would try to find some place of sanctuary, of safety for them. And, you know, sometimes the abuse is classified as religious abuse, but it happens in the home, where a husband says, you know, I have every right, you're my wife, I'm the head of the household. And he uses that as an excuse to physically harm his wife. Mm-hmm. For those women, they have to be ultra cautious, because we know that the most dangerous time for a woman in a domestic violence situation is when she's trying to leave. So more women are killed as they're trying to leave than at any other time. So we have to try and find a way for them to get out of that situation in secret, to safety, and to a place where they can't be found. And that's a big process. Like, that takes a lot of people to engage and help over the long term. It's not a quick fix. It's not something that can happen in 2 weeks and, oh, now we're good. You know, it can take years to sort that out. But I would urge people to talk to somebody first, reach out to someone, and try to find some help, because there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is a better way to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know in the United States, we have a program under the United Way program. You can dial 211 on any phone, and it automatically goes to United Way's program. And for example, right here in my area in Western North Carolina, we have, I think, between 600 and 700 resources. Now, they may not all apply to, you know, the people that might need help because they're being abused, but there are homes, there's places, you know, sanctuaries and safety places for abused women and men. So In the United States, all you have to do is dial 211 any time of the day, 24/7, and you will reach somebody who will ask you your zip code. And then they will say, you know, what is the situation? You tell them, you know, I'm being abused, you know, I'm being harmed or whatever. And they will connect you to resources that can support you. So there are resources out there. And I do know that there are also good religious leaders out there. But this show is about people who are abusing religion. I can think of some people, you know, some priests that have absolutely abused their position. They're very narcissistic. They act like they're putting on a show. And, you know, depending on how you're growing up, we all grew up differently. It's just very, very disappointing. And I can see why people are leaving churches and stuff. But I do want to say that it's been really enjoyable connecting with you, Wendy. It's been a little while. And you've shed some really good information. You know, you've shed some light on this sexual abuse, harassment, bullying, discrimination in the hands of religion. And some, I know people listening have learned something. So if anybody is inspired by what you're doing, resonate with you, remind them again, what is your website and how can they contact you?
They can contact me through the website, and it's whenfaithhurts.com.
Wonderful.
And I want to say too, here in Canada, the United Way has the same system. So you can dial 211 on any phone in Canada and get the same services as well. So yes, we have that here too.
I just learned something new, Wendy. That's perfect.
There you go. What,
I didn't know. That's fantastic. See, we're spreading 211 around. That's perfect. And I have sent a lot of people to 211 that needed help of all different types, and they've gotten help that they needed.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anybody wants to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is WendyWeb47.
Awesome. Okay. And again, it's whenfaithhurts.com is your website. They can also put their story out there. Do you respond back to these people when they submit it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Perfect. Yes. Well, this has been a wonderful interview. I thank you, Wendy, for being on the show, shedding light on what's going on with the hands of religion. And I hope you'll be back on my show another time. To everyone out there, stay empowered and listen to the show again and learn from Wendy. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Empowered Whistleblower. As your host, I will continue to bring in the best experts to share their knowledge and empower our listeners. Nobody has to feel like a victim. There are solutions to bullying and discrimination. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. All our future shows will offer practical guidance so that anyone can choose to stand up to bullying and discrimination. You deserve to be happy, and life is all about choices. I always welcome comments and suggestions for new shows. Please comment and share your ideas, and be sure to come back for more inspiration and empowerment. I am Domery Westmoreland signing off and wishing you much happiness and empowerment in your day.